Welcome to the Five Leadership Questions Podcast. I am your host, Barnabas Piper, here as usual with Todd Adkins.
Ow!
Todd is the Director of Leadership here at Lifeway Christian Resources.
Yep, today.
Yes, right now. Yeah. Well, at the time you listen to this, who knows if that'll still be the case. As far as we know, will be. But he heads up the Lifeway Leadership Team. I serve on that team along with a handful of other people. This fall, our team is hosting a conference called the Pipeline Conference.
Yes.
What we are doing this week on the podcast is bringing on several of our speakers for that conference so that you can get a sense of who they are, what their passions are, why you should come to the conference, because they're awesome and they have wonderful things to share with you.
Yeah.
And today we will be talking with Jenny Catron, who you've heard on the podcast before. If you're a regular listener, she's been on probably half a dozen times.
Yeah.
To talk all sorts of things, practical leadership. She has an abundance of practical wisdom. What she will be speaking about at Pipeline is collaboration. And Todd will explain how that fits into the concept of Pipeline real quick. Because that's an important leadership thing, but it's not just that. It is a key element of leadership pipeline.
Yeah. So if you remember from yesterday, we talked to Paul Tripp. And Paul Tripp at the conference will be talking about discipleship. Jenny will be talking about collaboration. So each one of these people that we're kind of talking to that are speaking at the conference also did work on leadership pipeline. So when you look at the overall concept of leadership pipeline, we ended up breaking it down into six different categories. Discipleship is one of those categories. Now, Paul Tripp came in and he did, what does discipleship look like for a volunteer? What does discipleship look for a leader? For a ministry director and for senior leaders in the church. Jenny does that for collaboration. Eric Geiger does it for strategy. Will Mancini for vision. So what we did was brought in people that would handle these things from tip to tail, from the volunteer who is really more concerned about leading themselves, going up to the next level of leading others and then leading leaders and then leading ministries and ultimately leading the church. So we handle that content at those levels. When we designed the Pipeline Conference, we wanted to make sure that we also did that specific scope and sequence. So when we say it's not like any other conference we know of, and that's because we've done it with a very practical, we want a map for a conference, which kind of sounds a little odd, but that's the way we wanted to go at it. We want you to walk away with having real handles.
We want to develop the people who are attending. We don't just want to sort of open up the fire hydrant of content.
Preach off.
But theory. To give a series so that they come away with, you come away, listeners, since you will be attending, right?
That's right.
With a real pattern and structure to leadership development. However, you will not be hearing that content from Jenny today. Today, we will be talking with her about leadership skills. So we'll have a conversation with her about some of the key leadership skills. You'll hear that in just a moment. Before we get there, I want to highlight two things. One is Jenny's book, The Four Dimensions of Extraordinary Leadership. In that, she looks at the command to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and then applies that to leadership. So what does it look like to lead with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength? So a cool paradigm for leadership, very encouraging and practical book as well. And then, as I've mentioned in the last couple days, I want to highlight again today, for being a listener of this podcast, we want to give you a special discount to the conference. So if you are a leader, and you could be leading at any level of the church, you don't just have to be on staff. You don't just have to be leading the entire staff. You could be a student pastor. You could be a volunteer leader. You could be any person who is dedicated to serving and leading in the church. We want you there. Use the code 5LQ when you register at myleadershippipeline.com and you'll get a 20% discount. If you register before the end of July, you get that discount off of our early bird rates. If you register after July, so through the month of August, you still get the 20% discount, but off of the full rate. So the faster you move, the better it is. And if you bring a team of people, three or more, you get an additional discount because we have group rates. So we are trying to make this accessible for church leaders. We are not trying to just charge for and wring every penny out of you. We want you there. We don't want all of your money. So that is the push. MyLeadershipPipeline.com. Use the code 5LQ. Now, here's the conversation with Jenny. All right. So today we are talking about developing leadership skills.
Skills.
Skills. Yes, that's right. We got skills. That could go any number of directions because there are lots of leadership skills, but we picked five of them that we think if you don't have these, it's going to be very hard to succeed as a leader. And so we're just going to go the five questions.
Five skills?
It's five skills. It's kind of like a top five, but we're going to turn them into questions.
Five tool player?
Yes. Do you know what the five tools are in baseball, Todd?
Bats, balls, gloves,
cleats,
and Zambonis. Chewing tobacco.
Bingo. Hit for power, hit for average, field, throw, run.
Right.
I got nothing.
All right. So anyway, the five leadership skills, we are going to turn these into five questions in keeping with our five leadership questions theme that we or name. We have to stick to brand, be on brand. That's also important leadership skill. So the first one is, how does one develop good leadership skills in communication, both written and verbal? So Jenny, we'll throw it to you. And we're not going to do the ladies first thing. It's just that Todd's talked a lot already. So this is your chance to say something and redeem his nonsense.
I want to make sure, are we talking about, did you say beyond brand or beyond brand?
Be on brand.
There's a difference.
Yes.
I'm just checking.
I'm going to have to mute your microphone.
Important clarification there.
That's right.
Speaking of communication,
yes.
Right? Skills for a leader in communication. That's the question.
Developing skills. So what are some of the ways that a leader or an aspiring leader can develop both written and verbal skills? So just communicating with a team. So thinking more interpersonal communications as opposed to like public speaking.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Well, and, you know, communication is such a critical element of leadership. You know, it's like I can't emphasize that enough. You'll often hear everything rises and falls on leadership. And I will sometimes add and say leadership rises and falls on communication, because how effective you are at communicating to people is going to really impact the effectiveness of the team. So I think, you know, any great communication starts with listening well. And being, you know, I think emotional intelligence plays into this, of really being mindful of how is a team reacting, responding. Awareness of the unsaid, unwritten communication, because there's tons of communication happening, that's not being spoken and written. So even an awareness of
nonverbal.
Thank you. Is so critical. So I think starting with that, like developing the skills for communication, I think really starts with an awareness of what all communication comprises. And there's so much nonverbal communication that's happening. And I think listening well to the people you're leading, kind of understanding where they're coming from, what matters to them, what's significant, and then building systems and methods, mechanisms into your culture for communicating to your team.
Yep.
You know, and that changes. That, you know, when you have a small team, that it's kind of more caught. You're in proximity to each other, direction, ideas, initiatives,
Todd
vision.
Todd likes to just stick his head into our offices and chat about something real quick. And when there's five people on a team, you can do that. When there's 105 people on a team, it's not
so
effective.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, developing that skill of communication, I think a leader really needs to be attentive to, you know, what season are we in as a team? Are we, you know, small, large, medium? What does that look like? And what does it communication require at this stage? And, you know, in the different roles that I've served in, you know, when we were five people, everybody just kind of heard everything and was in all the conversations it just naturally occurred. And I think you have to get more systematic in that as the organization grows, whether it's, you know, different email method delivery, if it's meetings.
And also especially what's not communicated, because if you copy everybody on every email,
nothing is my job.
You're cluttering stuff.
I'm not responsible for this. There are five other people CC'd on this email.
Yeah, I delete an enormous number of emails that they might have some tangential relationship to what I do, but I was just copied on something because somebody was just sort of throwing a wide net going, I'm not really sure who needs to know this.
Yes.
With 3 minutes of thought, they could have decided these three people need to know and we can skip the other 12.
That really leads to something I coach people on all the time is just think through three questions. Who needs to know? What do they need to know? And when do they need to know it? So you as the leader, whatever, you know, initiative it is or project you're launching or just what's happening this week, who needs to know? Because we all get inundated with stuff we really don't need to know because somebody just blanketed it out there. Who needs to know? What do they need to know? And when do they need to know it? And if we think through that lens, that really helps us kind of put ourselves in the shoes of the people on the receiving end of our communication. And we're being more purposeful about how we're doing that.
I think one thing you said earlier about emotional intelligence is interesting as well, because I feel like communication is something that It is so easy to think you are doing it well.
Yes.
Because you do not understand how other people are hearing you.
Yes.
And it's emotional intelligence that clues you into what are they hearing when I say this or when I talk like this.
Absolutely.
You know, or whether if I speak in shorthand because I know a lot about what I'm talking about and they may be relatively novice or whatever it is.
And that's, again, another place where it's important to ask for feedback from your team mm-hmm. or somebody else who's there in the room. To get coached up on. Somebody doesn't have to be a communication expert to help you communicate better if you open yourself up to that. Critique.
Everybody is an expert in how they hear, which means that if you ask them, they can communicate with you and say,
totally.
I didn't quite understand what you're saying. Or right. when you communicate like that, it goes over my head or it makes me feel on the defensive or whatever.
I think, and many times too, it just seems overwhelming or it seems like something, hey, you know, this whole idea of nonverbal communication, I can't do that. Well, yeah, you can. It's really pretty basic stuff. Mm-hmm. If you just pay attention, the piece is paying attention. It's like, are their arms crossed? Are they leaning forward? Yeah. Are they engaged? Are they not engaged? I mean, it's pretty straightforward. It's not rocket surgery.
I think one other thing on communication is...
You like that?
I like that rocket
surgery. It's a combination of rocket science and brain surgery.
Right, rockets probably need surgery sometimes.
Occasionally they do.
I don't know. I'm not a rocket surgeon.
You could be.
Scientist.
You could be.
Yeah.
One thing I was going to say before you started creating
it's the
new
afternoon,
phrases,
man, and we just all had really good pizza.
It was really good.
Yes.
Is... Don't assume that people are picking up what you're putting. Like, if you are a leader who's trying to communicate to a large organization, so if for example, Eric Geiger, who is Todd's boss, wants the directors to communicate something, he needs to communicate it clearly to them and then communicate clearly what they need to pass on and when. So it's the same questions. What do they need to know? What is it?
Who
needs to know? What do they need to know? When do they need to know it?
Yeah.
But passing that along to say, this needs to be passed on to your team by the end of the week or something like that.
Yeah. Well, clarity.
Even knowing what form to do that in.
Yeah.
So is this verbal? Is this email? Is this a... Yeah.
What,
how serious is this? Is this a policy or is this, you know, what
information is
what is this?
And we all know what you're talking about because if, you know, sometimes you'll come in and go, hey, just something to keep in mind. And sometimes you pull the team together and you're like, hey, this is something that we need to focus on as a key part of our job for the next 6 months.
Right.
And those are two very different things.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, let's hit our second skill, the second question. And Jenny, you brought it up as part of communication, and that is listening. So the second question is, how does somebody develop listening skills as a leader?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think this one, I think this is the other danger for us as leaders is that we think we're listening or we think that people are actually telling us everything. And so really building in... figuring out who will actually tell you the truth on your team, you know, and then giving those people permission to speak truth. I mean, you know, a number of times when I've worked with teams, if you're back to the emotional intelligence piece, if you're paying attention to the emotional temperature of the team, you can tell if people are not saying everything.
Right. You're listening for what's not there.
Absolutely. Yes. Key part of listening is asking good questions, and you can't ask good questions unless you're listening, but it's those good, insightful questions that's going to draw out what's lying beneath the surface.
And you have to make it safe for people to actually say what they're really thinking, feeling, processing, whatever, you know, the dynamic is that they have to know that they can actually say everything. So, I mean, the skill of listening for us is creating cultures where people feel like they can actually speak truth. And because then we're going to actually be able to hear the things we need to hear to lead effectively.
I think an example of how, I mean, if leaders are having trouble putting together the whole safe space thing, think about the parent-child relationship. Mm. I mean, so I have two daughters, and I know when I have become a bit heavy-handed as a dad because I know that because I have begun to shut them down when they start to give their feedback. Now, there's a fine line between talking back and feedback with a kid.
Right.
But if I'm creating an atmosphere where it's safe, they can ask questions. They can say, you know, they can ask the why questions. They can ask the, you know, just whatever. And they can kind of speak freely. Whereas if I become too heavy handed, their opinions are never heard. It's the children should be seen and not heard kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's real easy to do that as an organizational
totally.
Leader as well.
Yeah. Yeah. We can shut down things quickly. And, you know, and I've felt this as a leader, like you might get exasperated by something, you just, you know, we need to move on. This is what we're doing. This is where we're going. Mm-hmm. And you make a statement that just kind of shuts everybody down, and you're not able to hear what are the concerns that they're facing? What are the challenges that that's posing that we may not be aware of because we don't sit in their seat right. and know what we're, you know, what it's creating for them, the messes that kind of get created sometimes for our teams. So I think the listening piece is so much about, are we creating a culture where we're getting honest and truthful feedback?
Yeah, I feel like a big piece of listening is just observing. I mean, you mentioned this specifically with the nonverbals, you know, how are they reacting? When you say something, does the room sort of slump? Do they tense up? Do they, mm-hmm. or do they get excited? Or do they all just tune out and they go, oh, here's that thing again, you know, so-and-so's on their soapbox. But that, you know, but that's a watching, you're sort of listening with your eyes as opposed to hearing just what people are saying, because so much of missed communication is just what's not said.
Right.
So you can't hear it, but you have to listen for it anyway.
It's good.
Good deal.
All right. Next one. Organization. So this is going to be thrilling. Buckle up, everybody. Everybody loves to talk about getting organized. How can a leader become more organized? Thinking two key areas. One is prioritization. So mm-hmm. prioritizing the work they have to do. And the other is sort of tracking their progress in their work. So I'm not mm-hmm. thinking like to-do lists as mm-hmm. much as I am ranking their work properly so that those things that are actually urgent get done first and not the things that just sort of get thrown in.
Yeah.
And then making sure that they are accomplishing the right things. So sort of tracking their progress and keeping and measuring it, because that I would say that's a key piece of knowing that you're actually doing a good job, is being able to look back and say, we hit these markers.
Right.
So prioritization and tracking progress. How can a leader develop those particular skills?
I would look, first of all, one of the best reads ever, still a classic, is Covey, is Seven Habits. And so 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. One of those pieces, he does a quadrant on time management, and it is gold because it helps you very quickly categorize things and put them in perspective and how you should prioritize them. And so, you know, hopefully you're getting away from the tyranny of the urgent, mm-hmm. because, you know, if you, you have to watch, because if you don't prioritize your day, other people will prioritize it for you. And
yeah, your email box will prioritize it for you.
Yes. I would like that. I think is one of the biggest challenges sometimes for leaders, is that we let email drive us rather than we dictating how we use email. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'll have people just kind of wide eyed when I say I look at email twice a day. Like, instead of keeping it up and just always responding to it, it's like, I have a chunk in the morning and a chunk in the afternoon where I'm actually like digging in and responding, but I'm planning when I'm actually doing email. Otherwise, you'll just spend your whole day in it. But that was kind of a tangent. I think as leaders, we've got to pull out at various times. So, you know, in the prioritization and like big goals and planning stuff, you know, every 3 months, you know, I'm pulling back and looking at, okay, what is the next 3 to 6 months look like for me? What are the major, you know, goals that I need to move forward, and where do I need to build into time into my schedule to make that happen? You know, so that mm-hmm. I'm looking 3 to 6 months ahead, because a leader has to be out ahead of everybody else.
Right.
So if we're living in today, we're not leading, mm-hmm. you know? And so we've got to look at our schedule, map it out, get those big objectives kind of on the calendar and locked in so that they're protected and they're guarded, so that we're helping move that ball forward.
Right.
And then from there, you're pulling back and you're going, every week I'm revisiting that schedule and mm-hmm. saying, okay, does the schedule reflect the same thing? That was one of the things I did a 7 Habits training back in my early 20s. And one of the principles that they taught us in that training was, every Sunday night, review your calendar for the week and make sure it reflects your greatest priorities, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that was such a brilliant, simple, you know, kind of tool that they taught us, but it has served me so well as a leader. And the thing also I would encourage leaders is that you'll build some of those systems and those habits of how you work. And I think every 6 to 12 months, you have to revisit your whole system and possibly blow it up. because you know what you need to focus on might actually change. What gets the greater percentage of your time may change just because organizations are constantly growing and changing. And if you're in a leadership seat, your staff are growing and changing and they're taking on new responsibilities. So always be looking for who can I keep moving things to. So it's back to our development piece we're always talking about in pipeline is there are things that I should be always moving to looking to give away.
Right.
You know, and I think that's part of our organization, our prioritization is what can I be giving away and developing somebody else up into so that I can be taking on more.
Yeah. As a leader, you need to be a conduit, not a container. Yeah. And that's a really important distinguishing thing because in so many instances, you know, I don't want to, you know, sometimes we refer to managers in a disparaging way, management versus leadership, all that. But I would say that from a leadership standpoint, be careful not to be a container. One of the things I was going to mention, I had to bring it back up in my phone. There was a great article in Harvard Business Review. It's called A Modest Proposal, Eliminate Email, which I would shout from the rooftops and dance wildly if it ever happened. But the interesting thing is that the article opened up with a story from IBM in the early 80s who practically invented email, and they spent $10 million, you know, on this mainframe and how it's gonna, you know, increase work proficiency so much. And it did for a couple of weeks. And then what happened is it was so convenient.
And someone's grandma got a hold of it and started sending forwards.
No, it was so convenient and so easy. People started to over-communicate things that they didn't necessarily need to. And so that began what we have now, which is, you know, 24/7, 7 days a week. We have a tendency to look at things. And like I said, if you do not plan your day, if you do not prioritize your day, someone will prepare, will do it for you, or the tyranny of circumstance.
Yeah. Right. It'll start to encroach on things that it should not encroach on. You know, if you are home and you intended to have a relaxing evening, if you look at the email on your phone, if the little red notification is just nagging at you, which is why you should turn notifications on your email off on your phone, it will ruin an evening. Because even if you don't answer it, it's in your head.
Yeah. You're thinking about it. You're thinking, oh, I'll have to handle that.
I think one thing that you talked about, the principle of kind of prioritizing on Sunday evenings, I would say that should almost be a daily exercise.
Yeah.
Just in terms of the best days that I have are ones where the afternoon or evening before I have already determined what do I have to get done the next day. These two or three things are my sort of these are the big rocks tomorrow.
Totally.
Everything else fills in around
them. Eat the
frog. Eat the frog.
Yes. Everybody has this thing that they do not want to do. They're dreading it. They hate doing it. I don't want to do this. It's awful. Just eat the frog.
Don't lick it. Don't chew it. Just swallow.
Don't set it over for later.
It's going to get nasty if you leave it sitting on a shelf.
Can I come in the morning first, please?
Can we fry
the frog? Roll it in batter.
No, that's so good, though, because I think a lot of us don't do this well in that we look at, you know, because I totally agree with you. You know, we do this at 6 to 12 month, 3 to 6 month, and then weekly, and then even daily of like revisit, recalibrate and it's only one or two major things a day because there are going to be other interruptions. So it's not like we don't have, you know, I mean, we, especially in a leadership seat, we do have a responsibility to the people around us. So we have to create some margin to be available. But if you've declared those one or two things that are key to moving mission forward, and that's, I mean, that is your goal. That's your commitment for the day. I mean, it's so clarifying, you know, to be able to do that. So totally agree.
All right.
I don't know if I want to eat frogs, though.
You got to.
I mean, there's a frog every day.
There's a frog every day.
Frog a day keeps the doctor away.
There's like a,
I need a different analogy than a
mega frog.
Worm?
No.
Goldfish?
Have you ever eaten a goldfish?
It's got to be something unpleasant.
I guess frog. As long as I can fry the frog, I'm good.
Raise your hand if you've ever eaten a goldfish.
Jenny, your hand is not raised.
My hand is not raised.
The boys have.
Did you do it in a youth group context?
Of course.
Yeah. Pastor's kids over here.
I know, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's how we roll.
Well, after the goldfish, the frogs aren't so bad. all right. Next one. Now that you have learned something about Todd and I that we eat raw animals, at least we did when we were in high school. The fourth question is about how a leader can develop as a learner. Now, we did a podcast on this earlier, but we're talking specifically just sort of practical habits and skills. This is about leadership skills. Mm-hmm. So how does somebody develop learning skills or learning habits? Mm-hmm. Those particular things.
Yeah.
Either one of you can go first.
Yeah, I'll jump in.
Go for it.
Todd's making weird faces over there, so I don't know what that means. But
he's probably burping up frogs.
He's burping up. So, I think you've got to build habits into your just the rhythm of because people always ask me, Jenny, how do you read so much? Well, you have to just build in practices for that to happen. So, simple things for me, I will. I'm listening to podcasts like the Five Questions podcast.
I've
heard good things about that one.
Amen.
I know it's a good, yeah. While I'm running or exercising, you know, it's like just that habit of any time or driving in the car, if I'm commuting somewhere, I'm typically listening to something that is helping me grow as a leader. So, you know, putting some of those things into practice, I just have a personal rule that I only read things that have been recommended to me two or three times by people that I trust and respect because there's so much. You're laughing at that.
I'm laughing because there's like two or three people. If they recommend a book, I'll read it. Everybody else, I'm like, mm-mm.
Well, there's so much out there. So it's like, I'm going to pay attention to the people who I am learning from and I respect their opinion on things. Then that's going to impact what I'm reading because there's so much. But I'll usually have, something for spiritual growth and then something for leadership development always, that is in the queue that I'm reading. Mm-hmm. And then that's on my Kindle or on my phone. And so if I'm waiting in the line somewhere, I'm reading. So I'm just always looking for what are those fractions of time that I can always, my habit is to just go to, taking in what I'm learning.
I'll go ahead, Don.
Well, I was just going to say, and we've said this before on the podcast, but with the speed of change in our culture on the planet right now, learning is absolutely essential to leading.
Yeah.
They are one and the same.
Yeah.
Yes.
You no longer have the luxury of specializing in any one thing. Even if you did, you are no longer the expert in it because everybody's the expert in it, thanks to Google. So it's really more about how quickly can you learn and adapt. If you're not a leader, you got a short shelf life.
You're not a learner.
Learner. Yeah. If you're a leader and not a learner, you got a short shelf life.
The other piece with that too is we can consume a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So also, do you have systems built in for how you're making sure you're actually learning it?
Yeah.
Because I think I can read, I can listen to a lot of things, but am I making application that's helping me apply it and really learn it? I think there's a distinction there too. If we're talking about leaders being learners, are we really learning it versus
on StrengthsFinder, one of the strengths that out of the whatever it is 36 or whatever is collector.
Uh-huh.
And that's basically somebody who absorbs things, but they can be like a rock collector as a kid, but then it's just sort of collecting knowledge, trivia, things like that. At one point that was on my top five. I don't know if it is anymore. And that's a dangerous one because there's a difference between collecting and learning. Like a library holds lots of knowledge, but does not know anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what happens to somebody who's a collector, but not a learner.
Well, and one of the things that we would say leads to transformational development is the overlap of knowledge, experience, and coaching.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's gaining that knowledge.
Yeah.
It's doing something with it and it's getting that feedback about it. So a lot of times, if I'm going to learn something, it's usually what I'm doing is learning something and putting it into practice, or I'm learning something and then, helping others walk through it or whatever. And as a leader, you have to be doing that. One of the best ways to hold yourself accountable is to do that for other people or alongside other people. So take people through a book. If you take them through a book, you're going to learn way more than just reading the book by yourself.
Yeah.
So there are, I think there are ways that you can help yourself and help others.
I think one other application to something we were talking about earlier was listening. It's listening in an interpersonal context can seem sort of stressful because it's, there's a lot of there can be a lot of conflict involved. You're trying to understand how somebody else is coming across. But if you listen as a learner, so if you go into any interaction, you'd say, this person has something that can help me. Then it creates humility. It creates kind of open ears, and you're really going to try to understand what's the value in what that person is saying. And you're not using them as a resource, but it's more like a humble stance saying, anybody I work with, from IT to accounting to marketing to the executive level leadership to editorial to whoever, has something to offer me in a conversation, in an email, whatever it is. And so there's just a mindset of, what can I glean from this, whatever it is, this interaction?
Yeah, from a conversation, from, kind of our family joke is that I turn everything into a leadership example. You know, so we'll be hiking a mountain.
Todd turns everything into a leadership one-liner.
Yes. This is true.
Yeah. So my husband's like, do you have to turn that into a leadership example?
Yes.
Yes, I do. Because I'm constantly applying what I'm experiencing it and trying to learn from it and going, okay, where does that apply to my world? Mm-hmm. I think, leaders are, the skill of learning is really looking at every experience we're a part of and saying, what can I learn? How can I grow? And also, obviously, purposefully, reaching out, and whether it's books or podcasts or, teaching or conferences or wherever those learning environments are, that we're seeking out that knowledge and information, but also just daily life and experience.
And I think if you have that mindset, unpleasant interactions or boring circumstances both gain a lot of value. If you're stuck in a really boring seminar, which we all get stuck in sometimes, if you're looking to learn something, it makes it go by quicker. You're going to glean something out of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's, I'm going to take notes on how not to do a presentation, but you learn something
totally.
And you'll be better for
there
it.
You go.
Yes.
All right. So our fifth one, and this came up earlier when we were talking about prioritization, but the fifth one is goal setting. Yeah. So how can a leader be better? How can a leader develop in goal setting, and let's say both short-term and long-term, or let's say both personal and organizational. So we can take this any number of directions, but let's talk goal setting. Mm-hmm. This is not a strength of mine.
Okay. I think there are several different frameworks that have already been developed that you can apply, like, SMART goals, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, time-sensitive, or time-bound. Sorry, I sounded really bored when I went through those. But those, it's like a standard thing that, if you just Google SMART goals and they work, that's why people talk about them so often. If you don't have that template, you can find half a dozen online. But I think there are some other things to talk about in developing goals that people don't often think of, and that is lead measures and lag measures. Mm. A lot of times people will set this big, hairy, audacious goal, and then they won't set
a pet peeve of mine.
Won't set lead measures to get them there. They won't say, they'll say, I want to lose 30 pounds.
Can you define lead and lag? Because those are terms that get thrown.
Absolutely.
The people who know what they are throw them around, and those who don't, it just
absolutely
sounds like gobbledygook.
So I want to lose, I want to lose 30 pounds. That's my goal. Well, that's great. Mm-hmm. That's a lag measure. The lead measure is, I'm only going to eat 1500 calories a day. I'm going to do 3 miles on the treadmill every day. I'm going to cut out all my soft drinks and only drink water. I'm going to cut out bread, whatever it is.
That sounds miserable.
It does sound miserable, doesn't it? Especially
but
having
the principle of that is you're controlling what you can control.
Right.
You're controlling what you can control. And you say, hey, I know if I hit my lead measures,
yes,
they will lead to the lag measure.
The thing that is lagging behind the thing that is being pulled by the lead.
So it's if I pull all these levers, this thing will happen. So it's to say, hey, if I want to have, 25 small group leaders this fall, I know that I need to have 35 one-on-ones with potential leaders.
Yes.
That is a lead measure that will lead to your lag.
Right.
So it's setting all those things in place. So
the short version is the lead measures are the things that you say, we have a big goal. How are we going to get there?
Yeah.
By doing these things.
Yeah.
These are the steps. They're ultimately the steps you are taking.
Yeah. And that's really, you know, as leaders, the goal setting piece is that's what we need to do, whether it's, and I think in organizations, we need to find out what the rhythm is for those major goals, whether it's 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. At one of the churches I served at, we did goal setting every 6 months just because it's a pretty fast moving organization. So we would set the goals for 6 months, and then every person on the team had to write their lead measures that would get to that goal. You know, and then so we're constantly revisiting, you know, those goals, and everybody kind of had their priorities built. Their goals were set for that 6 month period because we defined what are those big objectives we're working towards. And then let's break that down into, you know, whether it's daily, weekly, you know, bite size, you know, like mini goals within the goal. But they're things we can control. You know, mm-hmm. I can control whether I eat 1500 calories today.
Yeah.
And I know that's going to help me reach this goal if I'm consistent with that. And right. I, you know, that's a game changer in goal setting. Cause I think so many times I see organizations set these crazy, huge goals and then they don't get there, but they didn't build the in-between,
yeah.
You know? So we can set crazy goals, but if we're not building those incremental steps, you know, we just get frustrated and we quit goal setting and keep doing the same stuff.
Yep.
So on goal setting, how there's a, you know, there's very conservative goal setting. You set a goal you know you can hit, and maybe
that's called sandbagging.
But there are also times that maybe you should do that if you have, like, if it's been a rough stretch for a team.
Sure.
You set a goal, you hit the goal, you're like, all right, baby steps. And you know, you start to, yeah. But you want to stretch yourself over time. Mm-hmm. Then there are stretch goals. So you hear that a lot with budgets. This yep. is the budget we have to hit. This is our stretch budget. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the one we want to hit. Then there are dumb goals, like the unrealistic goals. And I think maybe the entrepreneurial types tend to often throw those out there because they're like, we're going to change the world. Well, that's not actually an attainable goal. I don't even know what the specific question is, except can you guys, as people who have led teams, talk about like stretch goals versus unrealistic goals? Mm-hmm. The conservative goals are the easy ones. We all know how to set those. Mm-hmm. I can lose 5 pounds. I don't know if I can lose 25 pounds. You know, that's one of those is a realistic goal. One of those is a stretch goal.
Right.
And if I wanted to lose 100 pounds, that's an unrealistic goal and also unhealthy.
Right.
So talk stretch.
No more Barnabas.
You can't see me.
It would be no more.
Stretch goals versus unrealistic goals.
Well, unrealistic.
Dramatic pause.
No, unrealistic.
I saw the wheels turning over there, yeah. So I was waiting.
Is something that there is no possible. Well, this is a hard one because when you're talking about ministry, it's difficult because you want to set things that out in front of your team that only God can attain. But it's like, but we also have responsibility in that process. And, you know, yes, as a leader, it's our vision to paint that golden tomorrow or set that goal out there. You know, a goal is just a dream with a deadline. You know, that whole thing. I personally lean.
I would roll my eyes.
I know.
All the way into the back of my head.
Exactly. But the thing here about unrealistic goals is if there's, you know, no way to get there, and I mean no way to get there, or it's unrealistic if you, as we've been talking about, you don't set steps into place.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes unrealistic when you don't have a path to get there. Mm-hmm. It's just, hey, this is where we're going. But if you don't say, hey, this is how we're going to get there, people will follow you if you're uncertain. They won't follow if you're unclear.
Mm.
So a big thing there is to just give them the path on how we're going to get there. So, you know, a stretch goal is something like it's attainable. Is it likely? I don't know, but we're going to do whatever it takes to put it all on the line to see if we can get there, versus, we're not really sure how we're going to get there and we're just going to pray a lot. And
I think this is the, you know, I think there's a combination here too of the wisdom of a team of leaders, you know, and hopefully you've got kind of a variety of personalities, you know, whether it's one or two people or four or five people, a part of a leadership team, when you're setting these big goals, mm-hmm. you know, ideally you've got that visionary person who's going to have the outrageous idea, the big goal, you know, that they're passionate about. But hopefully you also have somebody who is, you know, more aware of what it's going to tactically take to accomplish that goal, what it's going to mean on the team, you know, what kind of stress and strain is it going to put on the team to try to accomplish a goal like that financially? Can we do it? You know, so there's a stewardship component of whether that goal is a good idea and that's, it's just an outrageous goal or it's a stretch goal. And I think the power and the wisdom of a team working together to define that goal becomes important. I think, you know, I think especially in a ministry setting in churches, you know, usually there's a senior leader who is driving that vision. Oftentimes it's a board of elders or a leadership team that are driving that vision together. And I, ideally there's the wisdom of the whole group that's saying, you know, okay, let's consider every element of this and set that goal based on a healthy understanding of the whole picture.
Right. Yeah. And I don't expect your team to own a goal that you came up with yourself.
Great point. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what, when you said, I'm like, that's what I'm sitting here thinking that kind of,
well, how does that play in large organizations where a team of executives comes up with goals and the 1,000 employees are supposed to work it out and they look at it and they go, that is complete and utter nonsense. Like, how are we supposed to do that? They didn't make the goal, but the goals are always set by people above their pay grade.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's the ultimate job of the leader then is to say, okay, here's where we're going.
Back to the communication.
It's back to the communication piece. And here's the goal that we have set before us. I think we can get there. Mm-hmm. And people are like, well, how are we going to get there? I'm not totally sure.
And involve them in the process.
Let's talk about how we can get there.
How can we get there?
Like, what strengths does our team have that we can get there? It may not be always how the leader thought they were going to get there, but if they engage and involve their team in the process, then ultimately they're going to get.
Yeah. And your track record's going to speak for you eventually. Mm-hmm. You know, the two different organizations I've worked with, you know, one of them, both of them, big idea organizations. One of them generally delivered on those big ideas, you know, because a team of staff that kind of leadership team that worked together kind of fine tuned it, you know, and they were audacious goals that would kind of make everybody a little anxious, but the track record was such that typically they were able to accomplish that goal.
And over time, that probably energizes the team because if you've had success in the past, then the stretch goal becomes an inspiration.
Yes. Yeah. And then contrast that with another organization where big ideas, but not a track record of actually accomplishing them. And so the team would get really fatigued by,
it's another big idea. An eye roll year after year.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And so that's where, I mean, as leaders, we have to be mindful of that, you know, and really that's, you know, our own emotional intelligence as leaders and really understanding how we're impacting a team with that and what our track record is. So, you know, just in answering your question, I think our history, you know, can play into that, whether a team's really willing to follow us.
Yep. That makes sense. All right. Well, those were our five questions on leadership skills, or rather the five skills that we asked questions about. For you listeners, I hope that was helpful to you. It's good to have you back on the podcast, Jenny.
Thank
it's been
you.
A little
Always
while.
Always fun to be here. Yeah.
And listeners, if you have not, we have done a couple different webinars on Leadership Pipeline. Jenny, recently, at the time we're recording this, did the second one with us. Danny Franks did the first. If you go to lifeway.com/leadership and click on events, you can go back and watch those. Those are a great introduction to helping your church begin to understand and implement Leadership Pipeline. They're also completely free, which is the right price for everybody. So go check those out. Also, if you haven't, the early bird deadline for our Pipeline conference is coming up very, very soon. Which means you are losing the opportunity to get sweet discounts.
Sweet discounts.
I like the echo. It adds.
It's nice.
For you, thanks. For your leadership team, for your staff. So go to myleadershippipeline.com. Check those out. We would really love to have you join us this fall here in Nashville for a fantastic event. All three of us will be playing a role in that. Todd and I will be helping host it. Jenny will be speaking, along with a whole bunch of other fantastic speakers. So go to myleadershippipeline.com and sign up before the end of July or you will miss those.
Seriously, yeah, the lineup is amazing.
It is.
It's a great team of people talking
about
leadership.
You will come to get, not just to look around.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like it's
this is not church camp for pastors, unlike many other events that we have had the fortune or misfortune of being part of.
Yes, we
we should stop.
Should really stop there, Barnabas.
In trouble. Thanks so much for listening, everybody, and tune in next time.